I'd like to talk a little bit about the Arba Minim. Just before we start, I'd like to make it clear, everybody here has an obligation to mekayim the mitzvah. The first day it's the Vaisa, the rest of the times it's Rabbonon, you have an obligation to do it. Some say in the Old City, it's the Vaisa all days. Rabbi Yosef always goes to the Old City to take the Arba Minim every day. So I call upon him, even though maybe back in the States you didn't have your own, you relied on borrowing it from a parent or something, but here you got to get your own. Second thing to take into account is that about 15 years ago they made a big takona, a big tikkun takona here in Eretz Yisrael. They sold the closed packages. Up until then, everything was sold loose. And it's very hard for the person who really didn't know much about Arba Minim to purchase one, because he really did not know what he was doing. Now you can get a lulav which has been checked by a posek, an esrog checked by a posek, and a dasim that has been checked by a posek. Obviously, mistakes can still be made, and if you take it to some other posek and he says no good, they'll exchange it for you right away. But that does give the layman, the person who doesn't have much experience, a very big advantage, in that he can go and get something and be more or less assured that it is in fact kosher. The general rule is that you get what you pay for. You cannot expect to spend 90 shekel and get a mahudur for the mahajim and a mahajim set of Arba Minim. That can't happen. It won't. You'll get 90 shekel worth of Arba Minim. That's all. You won't get more than that. All right? So take that into account, please. Okay. So now we'll talk a little bit about the general halachas of the kashrus of Arba Minim. If you have a shot, you should ask a question. Okay. Let's start with the lulav. All right. Now, when you hold the lulav with the green part facing you, you'll notice that it gets thick at the bottom and tapers to a point at the top. Occasionally, you find a lulav that is pointy at the bottom and gets thicker at the top. What should you then do?
Turn it around.
That's right. You rotate it 180 degrees and presto, it's back to the way it's supposed to be. Okay. Now, as you hold the lulav with the back towards you, you'll see leaves coming out of the spine of the lulav, leaves coming out. You trace, you go up until you get to the point where there are no more leaves coming out. In almost all lulavs, there's a central leaf. They go out in doubles, and then they come to one central leaf that goes all the way to the top. That is called the tiomis. And for the Ashkenazi Pesach, that is where most of the action is. That's where most of the questions are. That's what you have to be careful about. Okay, so let's talk about this central leaf. What can be wrong? Well, number one, there's this concept of niktam. Niktam means that it's missing something. It was katum, they broke off a little bit. If you look in the central leaf on the top, it generally comes to a point. If you see that it's flat, that probably meant that it had come to a point, and part of the point is removed, so now it's straight and flat. That is no good, right? So you have to be careful to look at that central leaf to make sure that it's not missing anything. Now, another problem, especially in this kind of weather, is yovesh. The lulavim are often harvested much before Sukkos, and while they try to keep them in cold places, they can dry out. If the top central leaf is white, any sort of form of white, that's an indication of yovesh, and to many poskim that's possible. So you have to be sure that it's not white. Now occasionally you'll see that it is reddish, it has a sunburn look to it. It's brownish red, right? The Chaznish says that's no problem. That was just burnt a little bit by the sun, and there will be no problem. All right, now the most questions we have is something which is called nizdak v'nira kehemnik. That central leaf sometimes goes to the very top like this. That's great, all right? Most of the time it doesn't. Most of the time it's slightly separated at the top. Now, a hemnik is a tuning fork. If it's separated to the extent that it looks like this, it's no good. Now obviously, how much does it have to go? So Shlomo Zalman Orbach says, so long as the two leaves are going up, there's no problem. If they are bent to the side a little bit, if you see them bent to the side, then that is a problem. All right, now you will see people looking at the top of the lulav, and they get a magnifying glass and looking, trying to get a clear picture, is it in fact going to the sides or not going to the sides? That has done a lot. Now, if you are going to buy a lulav open, you'll find that the people selling the lulavim don't like people dealing with the top. Abay Parim, they'll say, Bali Adayim, meaning, look as much as you want, but please don't touch. Why? Because if you inadvertently, as you look at it, that lulav that you're going to sell for 50 shekel, it's possible. It has niktam at the top. Right, you just lost the guy 50 shekel. He's not going to be happy. All right, now I hope I don't cause too many people here to become disillusioned. Not everybody selling lulavim are honest people. One year I noticed that there was a person selling lulavim half price. Now that could mean that he's just a nice big bal chesed. As you took the lulav and held it up to the sun, you noticed that it reflected light from the top. Regular wood doesn't reflect light. So if you look more carefully, you notice that he had taken the lulavim and dipped them into varnish. Right? That did a great job of holding all the leaves together. Right? Problem is, you have no idea what happened before he put it into the varnish. It may have been like that. He put it, all right? So you have to be careful that all you're getting is the lulav itself without anything added onto it. Yes?
If you buy any notes, okay, then you go ahead and put your own.
Yes, you could do that if you wanted to, right? Yes?
Sometimes you find the top of the lulav is like covered in like a...
Okay, so he's talking about what we call a koira. There's a reddish-brown bark-like substance which is found on the top of the lulav. That's the way it grows. It grows with it. Among the Sephardi Jews, that's considered to be a tremendous hiddur. When the koira, you're happy. Why? What you don't know can't hurt you, right? Mistama inside, everything's together. It's all covered so nicely with this reddish bark. So the Sephardi Jews very much like it. The old Yushami Jews like it. The Briskers are concerned about it. Supposedly the Brisker Rav opened many of them and found that underneath there was in fact questions about the middle leaf being separated or being pulled aside. So if you have a Koira, nobody's going to say it's possible without a doubt. Certainly if you show it to a Brisker, he's going to say, okay, what can you do, right? But many people would use it. Yes?
What about a Knepple?
Okay, so the... You have to learn the vernacular, right? There's what's called a knepel lulav. Knepel in Yiddish means button. The top of the lulav looks like a button. It's curled over. It's curled over, round, around. Now, it's a machlokes rishonim if it's good or not. That's why the most of the poskim say, try to avoid it. However, always, you'll always find somebody, for some reason, he has a tradition, he's looking for a knepel lulav. You're looking for knepel lulav, the person selling will give you a knepel yulav, but generally speaking, we try to avoid that. We try to avoid that. All right. Now, in addition to the halacha, if the middle leaf is like this, there's another din of the middle leaf, and that is nechleka tiyomis. In other words, if I can borrow this, I know it belongs to. You can see that all. Obviously, we know that all these pages are separate. Yet when I look at it, it does not appear to be so. I can't see 300 separate pages here. No way. 400 separate pages I can't see. So too, the middle leaf sometimes, when you look at it, looks completely together. Yet if you were to look more carefully, you would see that the piece of green that binds it at the back has opened. All right. Now this is very hard to see without actually taking and gently separating to see if it's held together. If you're not careful, as you gently separate and see if it's held together, you can pull it completely apart and parcel it, okay? So I really would say that if you don't know what you're doing, then do nothing, all right? Just keep your hands off it. But that's another problem. In other words, even though it's completely together, as this is completely together, you still can have a situation where it would not be okay. In order for it to be a problem, the majority of that leaf would have to be open. That's a lot. The majority would have to be open, okay? All right, now, that's more or less the situation with the lulavim, okay? That's the situation with the lulavim. The size of the height of the lulav is almost always the proper size. If the lulav is very much bent to one side or the other, it's no good. Most of them really are straight. We're talking about the spine being straight. The spine has to be straight. The spine of the lulav has to be straight. Yes? Sorry, didn't hear you. What? Okay, so our minog is, that's what the Mishnah Berurah says, we put on three rings besides the, you know what a kershik lach, those are the lulav holders that we have at the bottom. Now, there's supposed to be a tefach of spine left besides the leaves. All right, that means that you shouldn't have any rings above within 3 inches of the end of the spine. Again, when we went up with the spine, we got to the end, and that was when the tiyomus continued. You back down, you measure 3 inches at tefach, then that's where you can make the rings from there down. Sometimes that means going down to a third of the, you know, maybe even 40% of the lulav in order to do that, depending upon, you know, where the thing or the spine goes up to. Say again? It should be with a, it should be 3 inches under the top of the spine. Further down. Okay, maybe I didn't understand it. Okay, now let's talk a second about Esrogim. Let's talk about the Esrogim. Yes? Excuse me? Well, the problem is that we try to tie it together. That's what it said, it should be tied together. So many people make a double, even if you have a holder, you want to tie it around, right? If you make a double knot, you can't do that on Yom Tov. So some people just go around and put it through, that you could. So mostly we try to do it beforehand. Especially, you know, this year when it comes out on Thursday, there's no reason why not. If somehow it comes on a Motzei Shabbos, so then, you know, you don't want it to, but you have to, you do it a few hours before Yom Tov starts, you know. Okay, let's talk about Etrogim. Now, the main problem with Etrogim is the Yichus. What I mean, the Yichus? We have to make sure that there were no lemons in the family. No uncles, great-grandfathers, with no lemons involved. Now, that is a hard thing to know. Hard thing to know. Why? Because the Etrog tree, by definition, is a weak tree. The fruit that it produces is not generally very good. And grafting on a lemon will do wonders for the sturdiness of the tree and the beauty of the Etrogim. So I'll call upon him. That's why we are generally very careful to buy an esrog only with a hechsher. Only with a hechsher from one of the reputable Batei Dinim who say that they have in their they have a Kabbalah that it is okay. Alright, so that's why you can get esrog of the Badats of the Charedis or Sheiris Yisrael. Now, there's what is called the Chazon Ish esrog. What's a Chazon Ish esrog? The Chazon Ish himself said he had a tvi'as eye. He was able to look and to be able to discern what was a grafted fruit and what was not. And there were esrogim that he himself used, made a bracha on, and then gave over to various people, and they planted orchards. And now we're dealing, you know, Chazon Ish was niftam more than 50 years ago, so we're now dealing with already third generation orchards from that. So if you'll hear about the Lefkowitz, or the Perlman, or the Deutsch, or the Friedman esrogim, all Zan Chazon Ish. Zan Chazon Ish, that's what they mean. It's an Chazon Ish esrog means an esrog that it's an offspring from when the Chazon Ish himself used, and we of course trust the people who were dealing with these esrogim that they did not in any way mix anything together. Now there's some people who use Yemenite esrogim. The reasoning behind that is that supposedly the Yemenite Jews were not agriculturally developed. They were not familiar with the grafting process, and they did not do it. The problem with them is that they're huge. Right, they look more like a football than like an esrog, and of course the bigger the esrog, the more chances of there being a psul in the esrog. Okay, right. There are many people do that. You will sometimes find some people use a Moroccan esrogim, or esrogim taken from Morocco itself. Again, they grow wild there. So if they grow wild, the idea is that nobody really did any grafting there. It's all very hard to know, and that's why a person really, really should make sure to get one with hechsher. All right, now, there are a number of different things to take into account with the hechsher. All right, first of all, you have to know that in Israel, many, many people take an hechsher without a pitum. A pitum is the thing sticking up on the top. Many, many people take it without a pitum. The same trees grow hechsher with pitums and without pitums. Most Israelis do not have a pitum. Most of the pitum moms go to Chutz Laretz or Hasidim. They're very into it. But most regular yeshiva guys do not have an esrog without a pitum. That's not a reason for it to be possible. It grew that way. Nothing fell out. Nothing fell down. There's nothing to be concerned about. Okay. Now, the main thing is the Well, one of the main issues is the color. Shini Mara is a problem. What do I mean? If the esrog were to be black, it'd be possible. Okay. What happens if the esrog has some black dots? Black dots? That's a shini mara, and that's no good. Now, it depends. If the black dots are on what we call the chotem, what's the chotem? The chotem is the part that the esrog goes and it begins to slope. The slope part of the esrog, let's say about a third down from the top. If there's a one black dot on the chotem, may the esrog rest in peace, it's not good, all right? Now, in the lower part of the esrog, you would need three black dots for it to be a problem. And then if you do find three black dots, you should go ask a shayla on it. Now, the question is, what do they mean by a black dot? Well, first of all, it has to be black. I don't know if you're watching where someone showed me here some esrogim. My eyesight isn't as good as it used to be, but those are not black dots. There were some brown dots. Brown dots are fine. Green dots are fine. Black dots are no good. Now, the question is, how close you have to hold the esrog to see the dot? It's a question of hodor, and there's a well-known mabit. Now, mabit says, you have to hold it like this. If, when I hold it like this, I can immediately see the dot, that's an indication that something is wrong. But if I have to look like this, then not. Okay, that's probably true. The problem is that sometimes, even if you hold it like that, you can see something, but you don't know what you see until you hold it up close. The mice, we generally look to make sure there are no black dots on the top, and there's only way to look slowly and carefully to see if you see any. Now, there are experts who can remove the black dots. What do? They use paraffin, they use wax, and they tap. Sometimes you can just take a tissue and wipe it off. It's just dirt, and there's no problem at all. Sometimes they take paraffin and take it off. That's okay. And then, unfortunately, dishonest people who use pins to remove the black dots. You understand that when you use a pin together with the black dots, part of the esrog comes along as well. You can't spot that immediately because it's still green underneath. Unless you look very carefully, you won't see it. 24 hours later, though, if you've ever partially peeled an apple, what happens to it? It turns brown. So all of a sudden, you got this brown dot thing. Where did it come from? What happened? It came from as a present from the person who you bought it from, right? So this won't happen in the reputable stores. If you go to a regular store and that won't happen, sometimes you see people selling it on the side. You have to be a little bit concerned about that. Okay. Now I will tell you there's a problem. What's the problem? The problem is that exporting esrogim is a big business. So the esrogim that ripen faster are the ones that are sold to chutz la'aretz. Right, the ones that were harvested from the trees 2 months ago were put on boats and sent to chutz la'aretz so they can sell them in America and England, where they want to sell them. The ones that we're getting are the ones that have been harvested recently. Now, an esrog is supposed to be yellow. A green esrog is possible. That's what it says. However, if the esrog has begun to turn yellow, that's also okay. So if you have a green esrog and part of it began to turn yellow, that's fine. The minhag is, even though halachically speaking, it's not at all clear where this minhag came from, but the minhag is to take completely green esrogim and to use them as well. But that is not as good as one that's begun to turn yellow. Yes? What generally happens is that, let's say, three quarters of the esrog will be very green, and another part you'll begin to see has become much lighter. It's not as dark green, it begins to slightly yellow tinge to it. It's generally not spots. I mean, spots would also be okay, but that's not generally what happens. What generally happens is one area begins to turn. Okay, now, there's a way of artificially taking green esrogim and turning them into yellow esrogim, all right? I'm sure there's some people here who are into biology and will explain the enzymes and bacteria action and all that. But what it means is that you take an apple and cut it into pieces. Then you take the esrog or esrogim and put them into a yichud situation with the apple, right? You put them all into a box, no negir, right? Sherman negir, but a yichud situation, put them all in the box, you leave them there 24 hours, 36 hours, and presto, the esrog turns yellow. Okay. This should not, under any circumstances be done by anybody who does not know exactly what he's doing. B'didi avemaisa, adamaisa. I don't buy by this person anymore, as you'll understand shortly why, right? I went to the person, you know, after Yom Kippur and says, I want a chazni shesogim. He says, listen, I got 7, 8 chazni shesogim, but they're very green. I said, listen, the Mishnah Berurah says green lechatchila, not. I want lechatchila. He says, no problem. He got precise instructions how to turn it yellow. I said, great. Come back the next day. I came back the next day. He said, boy, am I lucky. That's a bad sign. I don't like people telling me that I'm lucky, okay? Why am I so lucky? Well, he put all 7 esrogim together with the apples. 6 of them lost the okets. The okets fell off. What's the lumdish? Evidently, with the apples, when they cut up, they begin to rot. They begin to go bad. Whatever enzymes or bacteria are doing that affects the esrog. It begins to get ripe fast. Well, things get too ripe, the okets fell off. But Baruch Hashem, that's only 6. The 7th is mine, and the okets is fine. Okay. It looked nice. It was yellow. Very good. I wasn't sure there. Picked up the esrog, make the bracha, shake it, and hear a thud. Look down. Oh, no. The okets hit the floor. I'm sorry to say that the words that went through my head are words I never have used since I came to Israel. Right? I was thinking very negative thoughts about the person who sold me this esrog, right? My son was there. He had his own lulavan esrog, and I explained to him quite clearly that while halachically speaking it did belong to him, from a practical point of view, he was going to give me the esrog, or else he could forget about any future benefits from the vows and treasury at all. And he's a very smart kid. He hopped immediately what I had in mind. He gave me the esrog, okay? So I really would suggest, unless you want to take a chance of messing yourself up big time and have the thing just fall apart, that's it. I remember once, when I was about your age, I went once, there was a very well-known posseg, Reb Sholem Eisen, Alav HaShalom. So I brought him an esrog. This was 3 or 4 days before Sukkot. He looks at it and he said, Tzugel, Tzugel. That in Yiddish means two yellow. What's two yellow? He said, Tzugel. And there are another 50 people waiting in line. So I walk away, totally bewildered. So one of the people there had mercy on me. He says, what he means is that since it's so yellow now before Sukkot, by the time Sukkot is halfway over, it's going to start turning brown. Like it happens with all fruit. Fruit can't stay fresh forever. So you just make sure that, you know, that it's, you know, yellow it should be, but too yellow would not be good. Too yellow would not be good. Yes? Brown itself would not be possible, but black would. And if it sometimes it turns brown, it gets too... It's certainly not mehuda if it's brown. Right? It certainly is not mehuda. Now, yes? Brown spots are okay. Brown spots are okay. Well, that'd be nice to have, yeah. Yes? The size of the black dots are important only in that they should make it noticeable. So the question is, why did we call noticeable? There was a mice with a very important Rosh Hashiva. I mean, I was in no place in that category, right? They were sitting or looking at it, and there was one big important Rav there, looked at it, there's a black dot there. Nobody sees anything. He says, there! Everybody's looking, doesn't see anything. There! Everybody just, what are you supposed to do? The guy says he sees it, and it doesn't move in front of his eyes, right? It says he's on the esrog, right? Now, I know Rabbi Gordon in Oyer Sholayim, he did something one year, I was very impressed last year. There was something we weren't sure what it was. So he took one of these new digital cameras, took a picture, enlarged it, and there you saw on the screen, oh, in living color. Oh, wow, that's not black, that's brown. Everybody can see it's brown. That's when he was enlarged, right? Now we can do things like that. But the idea is it has to be noticeable. The idea is if you held it like this, you'd see. You may not see what it is, but you see something's there. All right, now there's something which we call bletlach. Bletlach. What does bletlach mean in Yiddish? That's a Yiddish word for leaves. What it means is there are on many, many, many esrogim a gray, off-brown discoloration, right? It is, supposedly they explain what it means is that the leaf blocked out the sun, and so there was a slight discoloration in the skin. That does not postulate it in any way whatsoever. These betlach are the normal appearance of an esrog, and it does not postulate it whatsoever. In other words, as strange as it to the layman, it would make no sense at all. A layman would see an esrog full of betlach and say, that doesn't look so good. And then there's one that's very clean, but with two black dots there. And he said, this is great. And he got it backwards. Okay. Now, the bledlach don't passel, but the bledlach is what's going to make the difference in the price of the esrog. How clean the esrog is, particularly the upper part of the esrog, that will determine the price of the esrog. An esrog with a lot of bledlach, 70 shekel, 80 shekel. You find an esrog almost completely clean, 150 shekel. And then sometimes it'll ask you to pay for 300 shekel if it's a beautifully clean and nice surah and things like that, right? So the price of the esrog is a function of how clean it is from these alim, from these leaves, but they do not pass on the esrog. Yes? Now, this is a very relative thing. It's a very relative thing. I mean, it's hard to say. A lot depends on the finances of the person. Certainly, a person doesn't have to put himself into a situation where he would have to not be able to travel where he wanted to travel on Yom Tov to visit family or wherever else it is. Normally speaking, a person should be able to get a nice kosher esrog for 70 shekel. You can get very fine things for 40 shekel also. And sometimes it happens, a person buys a box, 35 shekel, opens it up. Why'd they put that in? Oh, look how beautiful. Everybody's just staring. How did he do that? Because the people sorting them sometimes make a mistake and put really good stuff in, you know. But if you want, it depends if you want something very good quality or you want something which is kosher and adequate. That's the difference. You get all told, the whole thing together for 200 shekel, you get some very, very fine mahuda, really mahuda stuff. And if a person doesn't want to spend so much money, wants to spend like 110, 120 shekel, you get very kosher things. If he's getting all three, the whole set together, for less than 100 shekel, he's getting what he's paying for. There's no question about it. That's what he's getting. He's getting things which are kosher, but on the borderline. Kosher, you know. Difference between going to a restaurant and getting yeshiva food. Right? Yeshiva food you can eat also, but it's not the same thing. All right, now an esrog, have to make sure that it's not chaser. It's not chaser, there's no parts missing of it. Right? They generally take a good look and you can tell whether in fact there's anything missing, you know, sometimes that can happen, all right? Okay. Yeah?
What if there are dots on the pitum?
Dots on the pitum. That I believe is a machlokes. I believe Mishnah brings a machlokes. I don't remember the machlokes. I'd have to look that up to see that. Yes? Okay, so now the shape is a question of hidur. It's supposed to be built like a tower, you know, it's tapering, being wide at the bottom, tapering up towards the top, and it's supposed to have a lot of bumps. And the bumps are an indication of it being more esrog, while the lemon, of course, is smooth. Right? Those are hidurim, and very important. But the hidurim, that's going to again make the difference in the price. Yes.
The bumps supposed to be like in straight rows or all over?
It just mentions bumpy. I don't think it says any more than that. Yes? Okay, so just like there's a something which is called a gartel esrog. What is that supposed to mean? It looks like the esrog is wearing a very wide belt around its middle. That's what it looks. Right? It's pushed in the middle and it looks like it's wearing one of these wide gartels. There's some people who consider it a big heder, you know, the same guy wants the knepel lulav, wants a gartel esrog. That's very nice, that's very good, but the traditionalists go with the regular ones, you know, let's just keep it regular, esrog, that looks like an esrog, and that's what he wants. All right, now let's go over a second to the hadassim. All right, now the hadassim here, the important thing is the mishulash. The hadassim have to be, now this is the problem, lechetchil, it has to be kulo mishulash. Kulo mishulash. What does mishulash mean? It means that each nodule, each node, has three leaves coming out. Now, we measure from the top down, and we need three tefachim. Now, a tefach is either 8 centimeters, according to the Mormekil Shita, Reb Chaim Noah Shita, or 10 centimeters, according to the Chazon Ish. So that means that kulo mishulash means that the top 24 centimeters, according to Reb Chaim Noah, or the top 30 centimeters, according to the Chazon Ish, are going to be kulo mishulash, three coming out each time. And when you go to buy them in the packaged ones, you'll see it'll say kulo mishulash Chazon Ish, kulo mishulash Reb Chaim Noah, and there'll be rubo mishulash, even though rubo mishulash is not lechetchila, The same, but v'diavad it's kosher. V'diavad it's kosher, right? So then it's Rubo Meshulash, the Chazon Ish, and Rubo Meshulash, Rav Chaim Noah. Right. Now, there are people who spend hours and hours and hours looking for Hadassim. What is their main concern? All right. Now, in theoretical geometry, three dots are going to determine a plane. Okay. That's because dots, theoretically, have no thickness. Right? So if you have three dots, they'll determine a plane. However, practically speaking, in the physical world, dots have thicknesses. That which the leaf come out, that has a thickness. It may be a thickness of a quarter of an inch, but has a thickness, okay? So now the question is going to be, when we talk about three coming out at the same place, what happens if I have a situation like this? They're not coming out both like this. They're like this. See what I mean? In other words, I can take a string and go around them. I can connect them, but they're not all equal. At least it'd be better. They're not all like this, but they're a little bit like this. I can still connect them. There's a point of contact, but they're not exactly equal. You find what I'm saying? Now, the Chazon Ish said, this is fine. This is fine. So long as you can connect them, there's no problem. If you're willing to go with that, you got no problem. We go with that, not no problem, but those are not hard to find. But if you want to do, and it's what's Makubal, the name of the Biskarov, that when they mean exact, then things aren't so posher. Then it's not so posher. To find exact like that, that's something that's very, very difficult. Now, you have to be, if you're going to get your own, you have to be very careful to look carefully at the top. Why? Occasionally, again, these unscrupulous salesmen, they will notice that the top, two leaves at the top. Oh, everything else is so beautiful. Two leaves at the top. He looks, nobody's paying attention. Snip. Yeah, finished. No two leaves at the top. Everything is now kula mishulash. Except he just turned the hadas into niktam roisha. The top has been cut off. So you have to look very carefully to make sure that the top of the hadas looks like it's grown naturally that way. And doesn't look like part of it was cut off. If part of it was cut off, that's a major problem. That's going to pass the hadas. Yes?
Before the guy cut it off, it was kosher b'di'evet?
Right. The difference is kosher b'di'evet. Now it's kosher l'chatchil. He can sell it. Many people spend the same amount of money on a single hadas as they do on a luluf. Many places you see people buying a luluf for 40 shekel and each hadas for 30, 40 shekel. The packages are much less expensive. Less expensive because they're also... Okay, now, aravos. Aravos, Baruch Hashem, in Israel is easy. They grow all over the place. Two things to keep in mind. Number one, something which is called lavluv. What's lavluv? Believe it or not, I have no idea why this is so, but on many of the hadassim, the top leaf looks like a banner. All the leaves look like regular leaves, and the top one's like this little banner on the top. That's called lavluv. Some word in Arabic, and it's supposed to be a hidur. Chutzlats, we never heard of such things. Here in Eretz Israel, you'll see nowadays, I don't know if they do it anymore. They used to have little Arab kids yelling, lavluv, lavluv. That's the word that we meant that they were selling aravos. The main problem with aravos is theft. They're little kids who decide to go into business. They get themselves a pair of scissors and a big bag. At 2 a.m. they sneak into somebody's yard, snip, 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 snip. They now have all their raw material, and then they go and sell it. Now, if the person doing so is above bar mitzvah, no problem. There's a problem, but there's no problem for us. He made a kinyan. He has the ability to make a kinyan, right? And the shinui reshus is a kinyan. When I buy from him, it's mine. But if the kid did it, it was under the age of bar mitzvah. It does not belong to the kid. It still belongs to the person. So who did the kid to steal it? I did. So if you see kid selling it, you got to find out where he got it from. He says, where do you have it? My grandmother gave it to me. Oh, if it sounds like he's telling the truth, all right. And if he begins telling stories here and there, we try to pass that up and get to take something else. All right. Now just two last things, and then I just want to say a few words or something about Yom Kippur. When we put them all together, all right, the idea is the hadassim go on your right side, three hadassim on the right, two aravos on the left, right, left, L, left, right. You don't get confused. Left, right, three adasim on the right, two aravos on the left. The adasim should be slightly higher. You should make sure that from the top of the adasim, there is still one tefach of shedra, of spine, 3 inches of spine. Now that sometimes means that you have to really put the adasim aravos to the very bottom of the lulav, because they don't make the lulavs too big, because they have to fit into the carry cases. And the adasim, they generally like to give you 35, 40 centimeters. You should feel you got a lot. So you have to sometimes put it low. All right. Now, the minig is to put three. We have that holder, and we also put three rings. Yeah. Now, the holder. It's a fine thing. It's highly dangerous. Why? You have the holder. You put in one hadas. Awesome. You put the other das in. It has a little bit trouble getting in. The well-known rule in Israel, Mashelo lech b'koach, yelech b'yotek koach. All right? You push. All right? As you push, it goes in and you hear a shh. Take another one, you put it in. What that shh was, the leaves being ripped off as you forced it in, right? So you took a 35 shekel adas and turned it into a zero one by pasling it. So what you have to do is take all three, not one by one, all three. Now that holder, if you compact it, you push it down, it becomes wider. And gently, ease it in, okay? Ease it in, okay? All right, now, the last thing is about the ninuim, right? We shake it. There are two shitas in the shaking, only two. The generally accepted Ashkenazi, Nusach Ashkenazi is, you face the east. You go east, forward, right, back, left, up, down. You go around in a circle. Up, down. Okay, that's the normal Ashkenaz, Nusach Ashkenaz way of shaking the lulav by Hallel, when you make the bracha. If you're in any Nusach Ashkenaz shul, that's what they'll do. The Hasidim and the Sfaradim do it according to the Arizal. According to the Arizal, you face east, you do Chesed, that's right, then Gevurah is left, Tiferes is forward, Netzach is up, Hod is down, and Yesod is back. Left, right, forward, up, down, and back. Okay? And you'll see a lot of people doing that. Now, obviously, if you're standing next to a chassid, and as you go to the right, he's going to the left, that, right, you did went forward, he went to the right. You go to the right, he's going to the left. You understand that can be a complicated kind of thing, okay? So take that into account, please. Okay, now something very brief. Yeah?
You see people that some people just move it forward and then people that shake it.
The nusach is just going back and forth is enough. That should be three times. Some people shake it as they do, but the main thing is the going back and forth. Yeah?
The hados or the arovo leaves are brown. Is that a problem?
No. There's no reason for the last and not the last. Most people change aravos in the middle. They're available in almost any place in Israel. Any shul, there'll be people selling the aravos for a shekel of a piece, half a shekel a piece.
Yeah,
you can change in the middle. You know, you'll be putting on Thursday, you'll have one for Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, you come to change, you know, to make it look a little fresher. Yeah? Okay, so as long as you have the aravos, even if you have a few leaves left, it's okay. But the problem with the adas is that if one leaf falls off, it's b'di'evit, you know. And when you finish challah and you look on the floor and you see there's a adas leaf there, and you say, it must have been the person who davened here yesterday, right? It can't be. It can fall off line. Yes?
When you shake it, do you have to turn to your right? Or just
most of the Sfaradim do that. We generally do not do that. Yes?
Is it better to just push the adas minerals down further to make it, or is it okay to cut off the bottom?
No problem cutting off the bottom, as long as you're very, very careful that you measure the length beforehand, right? Yes.
Is there anything change whether if you're a lefty holding?
Okay, so there's a machlokes, and the accepted Ashkenazi psak is for a lefty to hold the lulav in his left hand and the esrog in his right hand. The Mishnah Berurah suggests afterwards switching it around just to play it safe, because there are poskim will say otherwise. The Sfaradim, for example. Yes. Sorry.
The
das would not change. You wouldn't just change the jet thing.
If those people that put like the paper towel, the wet paper towel around their adas and then put it into the egg, does that count as like tzitzit?
That should not be done. No. No, a paper towel would be a chatzitza, that would be, no, no, you should not do that. Yes? Well, it's still right to be used for other people. So it should not be muktzah. All right, now just one, two words. You know, the minhag of Klal Yisrael is that during Ne'ilah, like the minhag that's here of the yeshivas, during Ne'ilah, a person tries to take upon himself a Kabbalah for the coming year. He's spent time, I hope, during this week, people are spending time thinking about the various errors they have to fix. And he wants to take upon himself some sort of resolution, some sort of Kabbalah that he's going to be careful about. The idea is to keep them small, or make them, I'm not going to say finish all Tehillim every week, right? Keep them small, small things, right? That's the idea. The Volva writes that one of the main problems we have in our Averus is that we blew our Bechira. We had Bechira to be Boicha and Tov, and we blew it, we Boicha and Ra. Now we're going to do something that we're not going to have any Bechira on. Come what may, I couldn't care less. I'm going to do this a matter of life and death. I'm not going to budge this. I'm not, whatever it might be. I will always say Birchas HaMazon from a Siddur. I will always make sure to say Asher Tzah twice a day with Kavon, or whatever it might be, whatever the person decides. Mekublani Mirabosai, that the Kabbalah should, you say during Ne'ilah, say that you're going to start it on Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. The main problem people have is that they take the Kabbalah and want to start it Motzei Yom Kippur. Motzei Yom Kippur is probably the worst time in the world to undertake anything. First of all, the regular yeshivas dorm aren't there. Everybody's rushing to get to the Arba Binim. People are making plans where they're going to be for Sukkot. The normal schedule is just not intact. Very hard for a person to keep up his Kabbalahs. So what happens is that it didn't really work so well the first day, and the second day it didn't go at all. By the third day, you're feeling pretty lousy about it. And by Chol HaMoed Sukkot, she gave up completely. You realize the whole thing was a whole mistake. It was not a mistake. The Kabbalah may be an excellent Kabbalah. It's just that trying to have it implemented during the Bein HaZmanim break is not a logical thing to do. So really, everybody should take upon himself something, one or two small things that you can really keep on and do. But the time for them to be implemented is when you're back in the yeshiva on Rosh Chodesh. That's the time to do it. Okay, Gemara Chasim, a tevet to you all.
You should look, but if you accept, if you start wearing it, then all of a sudden it'll separate it.
Yeah, the top leaf of the lulav, you want to make sure that it is held together and it's not separate.
And then there are different...
Sometimes
like the
right.